Payne and Pendergast with you. We head into the 8 o'clock hour. Don't be surprised if... We're getting a lot of those because we read Dan Graziano's bold predictions for the NFL. Don't be surprised if... DNA results show Seth's true father is Gary Busey.
The Gary Busey one hurts. I feel like, you know, I can handle an Ed Helms. I can handle a John Rocker. Back in the day, people used to think I was Brian Cushing it every now and then. Like, those are all well and good. The Gary Busey one, not known as a rugged leading man type of
what about, dude. No, not at all. What about Case Keenum?
Oh, Keenum, I take that 100%.
You've gotten that
a few times. Yeah, I'm Case Keenum. Now get out of my face, kid.
I know, I look smaller on TV. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, of course I'm Case Keenum. Now give me some money and scram.
Give me some money.
Give me your wife's phone number or your mom's phone number.
That's right. Someone's asking if we do this mile, are we gonna live stream it? Yes, I would imagine we would.
Oh, yeah. We will monetize it and we'll do it to fund some charity.
Yep.
We're kind of talking about like back in the day when we used to do the combine.
Yeah.
We could do something like that maybe, or make it a kind of a fun event. People can get out on a weekend morning or something.
Yeah.
We should probably have something where and we could make this kind of like a healthier version of the Wing Bowl. If we have a bunch of listeners just want to run a mile once a year.
Oh, boy.
And and we just have everybody participate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely would need disclaimers or what are the things you sign there for?
The release.
Release form. Yeah, definitely would need those.
That's one of those things. It's like eating shellfish. People understand. Like, there's a chance I could die.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Yeah, let's go. Let's run a mile. D'Amico Ryans met with the media yesterday, and we've not dug into some of the positions with this team and what the head coach had to say about it. Let's do that here. The offensive line, which we just got done hearing Mike Tannenbaum of ESPN tell us, is so ratchet that the Titans are going to beat out the Texans this year in the AFC South. Does D'Amico Ryans have a different take than Mike Tannenbaum on the Texans' offensive line?
I feel really good about our offensive line situation. We got guys who we feel really good can play tackle. We feel good about that with Cam, with Titus, with Tay. Feel really strong about our tackle position, inside guys as well. And then you want to be strong at that position. Similar to what I spoke about the defensive line. As we know, as you go throughout the season, things happen. And you don't always have the same guys that you start the season with. So as many depth players we can have, as deep as our roster can be, we're gonna need everybody, right? And that's always my line to our guys. Like, you never know, you're one play away. We need everybody to be dialed in and ready to go at any given moment, right? What, something can happen first play of the game. Like, are we ready to go? Are we ready to adapt and adjust? So feel really good about where we are with our depth.
I feel okay about the depth, but only in that I wish there was a further drop-off from the depth to the starters, because then it would mean, as it is with the secondary. I don't feel great about the secondary's depth, but part of it's just there's such a stark drop-off from the starters to your backup.
The starters are elite in the secondary.
Yeah, I guess with the backup offensive lineman, I feel like, well, there's not that far to fall necessarily from any one individual. So I'm optimistic this is going to be an improved offensive line. The individual players along the offensive line, that's a big crapshoot. I'm more excited about the fact that they look like they're playing as a cohesive unit. We haven't seen the mental errors or the mistakes or the lack of communication that we saw before. So you can get a viable performance out of that type of offensive line. If I look across the board, the only guy that I look at that I really think, man, okay, this guy might be a future All-Pro, it's Arianti Urstry.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might see a better version of Titus Howard, and maybe he's got more upside than I am giving him right now. But Arianti Urstry is the one guy that I'm like, okay, this guy, boy, he really might be something, man. This might end up being not just an inadequate substitute or fill-in for Laremy Tunsil, but a guy that I actually feel better about as a complete football player. Instead of having to say, boy, Laremy Tunsil is one of the best pass protectors in the league.
Yeah.
Oh, how is he as a run blocker? He's one of the best pass protectors in the league.
Right, as run blockers go, he makes a great pass protector. Yeah,
I think Arianti Urstry, if you said, hey, he'll never be the pass protector Laremy Tunsil is, but he's going to be a more complete offensive tackle, I'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, I'm with you. They're the two, I think, not only potentially, but maybe in actuality, the two best offensive linemen of this team are the two tackles, Arianti Urstry at left tackle and Titus Howard at right tackle, just purely in terms of, like, in a silo, those are the two best. you're absolutely right that it's all about these five guys working in conjunction. What's fascinating to me, and is going to be fascinating to me, is the fact that the interior of the offensive line was a major issue last year in pass. The whole line was an issue with everything. So let's back up and acknowledge that. But in terms of the pass protection and guys just breaking through right into CJ's face, you look at the interior last year and you go, man, that was bad. And it was, you know, Juice Scruggs at various times at left guard, replacing Kenyon Green, who was bad. Jarrett Patterson was your center, and he was okay, I guess, at times. And then your right guard, Shaq Mason, who, by the way, got arrested yesterday in Tennessee.
Yeah. It's not clear. It was some kind of allegedly a burgling and some kind of assault. It's not – I saw it framed by one aggregator as domestic violence, but in the police report itself, it doesn't say that. So it's not clear whether it was against a woman or anything like that.
No.
But, yeah, he was arrested for something.
Yeah, not good. Go Google it if you want to find it. That's neither here nor there for purposes of this conversation. Shaq Mason was bad at right guard last year. They replaced them with Laken Tomlinson, journeyman, Jake Andrews, one start at center in his career, and now it looks like it's going to be Ed Ingram, who they got for a sixth-round pick. I mean, you're talking about, I mean, maybe scrap heap is being a little, a little disingenuous. Potentially this thing could work. But these were not highly, like any team in the NFL could have had any three of these guys playing on their offensive line.
Right.
Like when they are fixing something with recyclables right now. And it just might work. That's what I'm intrigued by. Like, because the Bears spent a ton of money to fix their thing. The Texans are really finding parts here they think might fit and make a better overall product.
At the very least, I think you have last year, the left guard, who was your starting left guard and seemed to be like unmovable in terms of his position on the depth chart, was Kenyon Green.
Yeah.
He was totally movable as an offensive lineman. He got moved all over the place, but he was, that's our left guard. He's not in the league currently unless somebody picked him up, because the Eagles released Kenyon Green. Right guard Shaq Mason is currently facing charges.
Might still be in jail today in Tennessee. I mean,
this feels like the epilogue at the end of Animal House. And
killed by his own troops.
The two guys that started for you at center are both currently backups.
Picturing Kenyon Green like waddling down the field and then the shot freezes. And then they put the graphic at the bottom.
Released by the Eagles.
Yeah.
Deemed unfixable by legendary offensive line coach Jeff Stoutland.
God, that's hilarious. Oh, my God. That gets intriguing. So that was D'Amico on the what?
I saw there were some articles in the offseason, which I'm guessing were agent-driven. People talking about Shaq Mason, like, wow, Texans screwed up letting go of Shaq Mason. Somebody's going to pick him up and make him a vital fire. Like, what
cops.
The hell are you talking
cops
about?
Cops picked him up. That's who picked him
Let
up.
Let me show you one clip of Tavondre Sweat swatting him aside like a meth head panhandler or something. No. What the hell?
Someone's going to pick him up. Yeah, Franklin PD picked him up on Monday. all right, here's D'Amico Ryans. I like hearing D'Amico Ryans on this position group because this is the position he played when he was in the league. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the linebacking group.
Our linebackers are very athletic guys. Our playmakers is really, really encouraged with getting Christian back in the fold, getting EJ Speed, like two very athletic, fast linebackers. And I feel like they can take our defense to the next level, right? So feel really good about those guys when it comes to different packages and stuff. It just gives me more flexibility. Like if we want to play base, nickel, whatever we want to do, having guys who can run and be athletic, make plays in space, it really opens up the playbook for me.
And the question there, Seth, was actually, do you see yourself with this group? You have six linebackers now. Do you see yourself playing more base? You know, more three linebacker sets.
Yeah, and especially when they go up against teams like the Ravens or what have you. You know, Jalen Petrie is awesome in that role of nickelbacker, where you're basically playing linebacker against the run. There's sometimes where it's just it's a body mass thing. You've got teams that line up with fullback. And, you know, and that Ravens fullback weighs like 275 pounds.
Ricard,
I mean, he looks like a defensive lineman. and multiple tight ends, that sometimes you just got to have more mass on the field. And I think that last year, it's fine. Most teams in the league play with two linebackers or fewer on the field most of the time, but there are times in games where you'd really love to be able to line up in a 4-3.
Yeah.
And they really couldn't do it that much last year because of injuries and or unjust suspensions.
That's unjust.
At any given time, Aziz Alshire might have been injured, or he may have injured Trevor Lawrence.
Right, and then subsequently been unjustly suspended. Well put. Here's D'Amico Ryans yesterday. I think one of the bigger surprises, maybe the biggest surprise on the initial 53 at least, was the Texans keeping a third quarterback. I did not have that on any of my 53-man roster projections that I had done since the beginning of the offseason, Seth. But Graham Mertz made the initial 53. What's the thinking in keeping Graham Mertz on the roster?
One of the most valued positions in our league is quarterback. When you have a young quarterback who shows some promise, as Graham has done, he showed a ton of upside. You want to keep as many of those guys around as possible because as we see the trades and things that happen around the league, everybody is searching for that backup quarterback. And as we know, if you're not deep at that position, you don't have a guy, if something happens to your starter, you don't have guys behind him who can go out and perform and keep the team moving, then most of the time your season is just done when you don't have that next quarterback to step in. So feel really good about Davis. Davis has had the best camp that I've seen since he's been here. Graham has came in, worked himself back off an injury, missed a ton of time during the spring. So really just training camp is where he was just starting to get started. But I feel like he has a ton of room to grow, and he showed in our last preseason game. He showed that he can have the command that it takes. He has that leadership ability that it takes to be the quarterback for our team, and he's done a great job, and I want to see him continue to blossom and grow at that spot.
It really is, without overthinking it, there's an element to just, it's the most valuable position in all of sports. So even regardless of any situations that might come up with your particular team, it's if you got a gold bar laying around there in the sixth round, like, oh, if somebody offers you up a bar of gold for pocket change, do you take it? Yeah, sure. I have no use for it. I'm not particularly fond of gold as an investment class or anything.
Yeah, but it's funny.
I may or may not have a few bars of it buried around my property, okay? Right. It's nice to have, just in case.
Yeah.
As of lately, it's actually done very, very well whenever there's economic uncertainty or whatever.
In fact, now that you mention it, does anybody
I might have to dig up my treasure map. And it is a literal treasure map. And I think that also, though, in one of my live stream viewers pointed this out yesterday, and I felt like an idiot for not having thought of it myself, is D'Amico was on a team in the San Francisco 49ers who had to play with their fourth string quarterback in the playoffs.
Yeah, Josh Johnson. Yeah.
And then their third string quarterback had to come in with a numb throwing hand.
Yep.
Because, like, so, like, how much depth do you need at quarterback? Man, that particular year, it would have been nice to have three healthy backup quarterback or a three deep healthy quarterback squad.
Do you think Mertz remains on the 53-man roster as we head into the season here? Or, I mean, they didn't make any waiver pickups yesterday.
Yeah, I think he played well enough that they specifically, I think they were going to keep him on the practice squad no matter what.
100%.
After that third preseason game, they probably thought, like, nope, what are we going to just hope nobody claims him? Somebody might pick him up, and then we genuinely wasted a sixth-round pick.
It's
the most valuable position in all of sports.
Right.
If somebody said, so what Graham Mertz right now is a treasure map that may or may not be valid, but there's teams out there that are going to say, oh, wait a second, I can pick this guy up off of waivers for just about nothing, and it's a treasure map that might actually have treasure at the end of the rainbow.
Now, that team who picks him up has to put him on the 53. You know, they can't just pick him up and throw him on the practice squad.
Right, but I think
there's 31 other teams, you know?
And that's the price. It's like, okay, it's a roster spot. A lot of bad teams out there.
Yes.
And there's a lot of teams that don't feel great about their quarterback that would pick him up in a second.
You're absolutely
right. Just based on that one, you might say, oh, it's only one performance. Right. But it's a lot of quarterbacks don't have any good preseason performances.
Correct. Yep. Last one from D'Amico Ryans. What were you looking for in an OC when you hired Nick Caley?
The most important thing for me when I was looking for an offensive coordinator was the connection piece. Right? It's about how you interact with the players. That was the most important piece to me because I feel like coaching is all relationships. Right, and it's if I can build that deep relationship, that trust factor with a player, and I can – as players and coaches, we can accomplish anything because we have that tight relationship. and it goes to our the guys I'm looking for in our team. I talk about looking for everybody to come together, right, and be a tight-knit unit, right, to be together. Because when the ups and downs of the season, it's going to happen. There are going to be some high moments. There are going to be some low moments. But who are you in those low moments? The only thing that can allow you to survive those low moments is having a trust, having that true trust, having that true deep connection and relationship, you know, with your coaches and players, and that allow you to get through everything. So that was the main.
Interesting. Zero about scheme. Zero yeah. about, you know, the.
Yeah. And I, well, we talked about this last week, remember, or maybe earlier this week, about how, man, okay, Bobby Slowick obviously impressed DeMeco in a lot of ways, and DeMeco, you know, liked Bobby Slowick, but at the same time, he wasn't really cut from the same cloth as DeMeco.
No.
And when I watch, and I would say the same of Chris Strausser, just watching those guys and the way they operate, they didn't seem like DeMeco type of guys. When you watch Cole Popovich coach or you watch Nick Caley coach, okay, these guys just seem more like they're cut from the same cloth.
Yep.
And this, I think the scheme, I almost feel like with DeMeco, the personality was probably like the non-negotiable, that he was willing to talk to guys who might have different ideas about how they wanted to operate the offense and what have you. But the non-negotiable was, man, we need to have a guy that's going to be have swarm-like tendencies,
yeah,
and being able to get guys to play with the same attitude that the defense plays. And Nick Caley feels very much more like that kind of guy.
Yeah, he does. He definitely feels like a different personality type than Bobby Slowick. And I'm not saying Bobby Slowick's personality is wrong. It works for some. It's not. If Bobby Slowick didn't have the relationship with DeMeco Ryans and he was just one of like 10 guys that came in and interviewed for the offensive yeah. coordinator job, if I had to guess, he wouldn't have gotten the job. You know, just maybe just based on personality type.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But they had that pre-existing relationship in San Francisco.
Right. And when I point out, I think some people, and credit to them, they get really hyper-protective of DeMeco whenever we say anything at all remotely critical.
Yeah.
And so whenever I say, okay, one of DeMeco's mistakes early on was hiring Bobby Slowick,
yeah,
I think DeMeco would agree with me. He would never say
fired him.
out of respect yeah. to Bobby Slowick.
Yeah.
But every single coach, you can go undefeated in a season. You're going to make mistakes along the way. But especially for rookie head coaches, there's so much, A, that you know you don't know yet in terms of informing your decisions. But B, there's a time crunch. And when you're trying to hire your staff, there's not your dream list of candidates. A lot of those guys are already accounted for. They're under contract. They're on a situation that they feel good about and they just want to stick with whatever it might yeah. be. So it's not as simple as, hey, I get to pick the guy of my choosing. And meanwhile, everybody else is flying off the board. So it's an incredibly excusable mistake. I'm not skewering Dude. DeMeco for it. I give him credit for doing the really hard thing, which is firing somebody that you're friends with,
firing,
that you brought in.
That's hard. Dude, hiring period is hard in any walk of yeah. life. And to apply all those parameters around it that you just illustrated, Seth, where it's like, hey, it's one thing to go hiring, you know, salespeople or hiring people in a regular company where you've got nobody's under contract and everybody can just come in and get your resume to them. It's another thing where you got a limited pool of candidates and you got to get somebody hired by February 15th, you know, whatever, yeah. whatever the date is. That's hard, man.
The cool thing about the Texans,
especially when you're doing it for the first time. You know,
right.
yeah.
Well, and the one thing that I've been really impressed with Cal McNair as an owner, Cal and Hannah, is that they do not mind. They totally accept that, okay, there's going to be some dead money. If you don't like a coach, yeah. great. We're going to have to pay him. You know, it comes out of the owner's pocket.
Yeah.
It doesn't count against the cap or anything. But the Texans have been pointed to, is at least alluded to, when the NFL sent out a memo saying, hey, you guys might want to be careful. A lot of teams are spending a whole lot of money on coaches that aren't employed for them anymore. The Texans were one of the league leaders in that regard.
They were, yeah.
Which is a negative in that, okay, obviously you've made some bad coaching hires. But I always love an owner who's willing to spend that money.
Yes.
You know, Jerry Jones has a reputation of a guy that he has that weird reputation. He's willing to spend a boatload of money in some things, but he nickel and dimes that team to death in other regards. And like that's the type of, why do you hang on to a coach so long? I think part of it is he doesn't like paying a guy who's not employed for him
to not work for you. He doesn't like paying people to not work for him. Absolutely. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, opinions on the Houston Texans from around the league. Do you respect the opinions of players more or of coaches and front office people? Because there is one side of this that distinctly has a different opinion of the Texans, I think, than the other. We'll talk about that. Rob Stone joins us from Fox's Big Noon Saturday at the top of the hour. Stay there. All right, Payne and Pendergast, you know, D'Amico Ryans, we kind of unearthed this yesterday, is that D'Amico Ryans, based on a lot of the sideline microphones that get picked up, you know, when D'Amico's mic'd up on the sideline, guy comes to the sideline, makes a play, and he screams like, yeah, defensive player of the year, like to Danielle Hunter, you know, he's screaming, all-pro Sting, it's defensive player of the week right there. I think D'Amico Ryans likes accolades. I think he likes,
you know what, we'll parse out this quote, because somebody asked him about the top 100, was it Sarge? Somebody
Sarge
yesterday
did,
asked him about the Texans have the most players in the top 100. The player voted on.
Yeah.
The player voted top 100. And D'Amico gave an answer that I think explains exactly why he might lean into some of that stuff.
Oh, man. We pay attention to the top 100? No, I'm not. No, it's a credit to those guys. That's a big deal. It's a big deal to a lot of our players. So, you know, just for bragging rights, I think it does mean a lot to those guys. Who's our top guy?
Sting?
Yeah. So we had a few guys on there, I think, well-deserving. A lot of guys made it because they're great players. They're some of the best players in the league. So I'm proud to see our guys make that and get that recognition. It's pretty cool when, you know, you're working a lot. You know, Texans don't get a lot of coverage. But when we do get the coverage, to see our guys get recognized on that national level, that's big for them. I'm proud of those guys for that.
Texas. See, I think he cares, but he doesn't care about the award itself, but he cares that his players care.
Yes.
And he can, I think he views it as a motivational tactic, or just also the, you know, acknowledging, okay, you guys care about this and I'm going to recognize it. And then there you go. When, in, you know, most coaches are going to tell you, like, in their core, they're like, who the hell cares about outside acknowledgement? We just care about winning and everything. But he knows that the players do, or at least a lot of the players do care about it.
The next step is for someone next year, when they come out, to ask him about Madden scores. The Madden player scores. Like, so D'Amico, Sting is one of 8 99s. On Madden, that's always the big deal, the 99 club on Madden. It means you're one of the best.
Oh, there's only a few 99s?
There's like
Does anybody
a half
ever
dozen.
Get 100?
No, 99 is the most you can get. So it's
99 is the highest.
Yeah, 99 is the highest. There's usually like, I don't know, correct me, text page, if I'm wrong. There's usually like maybe like 6 to 8 99s, and then, you know, on down.
When did the Madden scores come out?
Like in the summertime?
They
they already came out. But
they did? Okay.
Yeah, but... If someone wants to ask him about him, that would be very entertaining for me and Seth.
Well, that, you know what, though? That's an interesting one, because that actually plays out with guys. Actually, you know, I like hearing stories about it. I never got into Madden or playing it or anything, but I always enjoyed, like, you know, NFL players playing with guys that either with themselves as a player or guys that they know and everything. Yeah. Like, that part of it does get interesting.
Did you ever get an NFL
player to speak honestly about, like, okay, the gap. What's the gap between which guy do you play against who's got the most underrated Madden score versus overrated and all
it's
that?
It's big, man. They care about that stuff. They care about that stuff.
But I want him to go Jalen Ramsey and just be fully honest. And like, Jalen Ramsey would do it
because
he has done it before.
Yep.
He called his own quarterback. I can't remember where Jalen Ramsey was, but he basically just threw shade at his own quarterback.
Oh, it was
and
in
when
the
he started
it,
talking about.
Was it in a GQ article? No, I'm thinking of Odell Beckham Jr. in the GQ article was throwing shade at everybody.
Jalen Ramsey basically just said something where he gave a lot of compliments to everybody except his own quarterback.
Oh, it was Bortles. Quarterback was Bortles. I remember that. I do.
But no, I think that he cares that the players care, and he knows that he can use it as a carrot on the stick or as an attaboy. Yeah.
I thought this was interesting only because it happened with all of the Texans players who made the top 100. The Texans had 6 players who made the NFL's top 100 as voted by the players. So it was like 1,000 players, and they put their top 20 and they tabulate the votes. Joe Mixon, 58. CJ Stroud, 39. Joe Mixon, 58. Will Anderson, 46. C.J. Stroud, 39. Nico Collins, 32. Danielle Hunter, 25. Derek Stingley Jr., 18th. So that's all voted on by the players. 6 of the top 58. That's It's going to wind up being the second most players in the top 58. It's the most the Texans have ever had in the top 100. So this, it's, you know, to the players, this is a big deal. ESPN did a top 100 of their own this past week, Seth, and it was compiled by experts, writers of theirs, former players that write for them, but mostly like their analytics people and their the Jeremy Fowlers of the world. There's about a dozen or so, you know, so-called experts that voted on their top 100. Every single player for the Texans that wound up in the NFL's players top 100, every single one wound up lower on the pundits top 100. Joe Mixon didn't even make the top 100 for them. I'll admit I was a little surprised he made it for the players one, and especially 58th is pretty high. CJ Stroud was 39th with the players. He was 90th with the ESPN crew. Danielle Hunter, 25th with the players. He's all the way down at 57 with the ESPN crew. I mean, I think some of this is playing into what D'Amico kind of just sort of side-eyed said there. Like, yeah, Texans don't get much coverage. We don't get much attention. Will Anderson was the one whose rating was probably the closest. He was 46th in the players. He was 50th with ESPN. Nico Collins, 32nd with the players, 45th with the ESPN experts, and then Derek Stingley Jr., 18th with the players, 28th with the ESPN. I mean, those are some big differences right there, just in terms of the perception of the Texans play. I mean, this isn't going to decide the season for the Texans. I just find it interesting that across the board, people who cover the game and don't play it don't find the Texans players to be as good as their peers do.
The one thing that kind of jumped out at me, Sean, where I think it might have affected this is off the top of your head, because you follow the NFL top 100 about 1,000% more than I do.
Yeah.
It seemed like there were a lot of offensive linemen on this top 100 list by the experts.
Yes.
And I'm guessing in the NFL player list, there aren't as many offensive linemen.
Certainly not high up the list. There aren't.
And I think that's where if you take a more measured look at things, there's just when I was scrolling down through, every third guy on this list is a fatty, you know, and I think that probably skews things a good amount. So I have to, out of respect to the fatties, I gotta maybe respect the ESPN list a little bit more. But it also makes me a little bit less offended that they don't have the Texans ranked as highly as their player.
Stay offended. Yes, you must stay offended. I just thought it was. I just found it like as I'm going through this ESPN thing, I'm like, man, these guys do not. Especially the big one is CJ. Okay, like that. Forget about the other ones. They're all fairly close. They're in the same neighborhood. CJ 39th amongst players, barely cracks the top 100 with the experts.
I think if you're looking at it again with a measured eye and using analytics and stats more so, then CJ's got 2 years of stats on him. And if you're trying to be objective about it and you're not looking at everything else, he's got one really impressive year. He's got one other year where statistically it didn't look as good.
Yeah.
So that's how I've been all off season. I think by and large, most people nationally haven't been skewering CJ Stroud at all. I think they've been saying they've just kind of put him off to the side. And as D'Amico said, people don't talk a whole lot about the Texans nationally. They can kind of just hold them off to the side in reserve, and they're looking at this year as, okay, I'm going to have more of a firm opinion about CJ Stroud after we see him with a different offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just interesting that this particular group of people, I think 90th is not indicative of a mentality like that. Like 90th is pretty far down the list. Like 90th is they did spend time digging into a bunch of numbers and labeled him 90th. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say 39th amongst the players. Feels like the players weren't even looking at anything. They're like, CJ, a dog, man. CJ's a dog.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. No, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But I wonder about the court. Like, Jordan Love was 87th on this list.
And he didn't have a good year in the second half of last year.
Right, but where was he on the NFL top 100?
He was higher than 87th. I know that. Yeah. He was higher than 87th.
I mean, there's a whole lot of offensive linemen on this. I think a lot of them just got pushed out.
Yeah.
Like, Jared Goff was 66th on this list.
Jared Goff just got announced he was 16th. Yesterday.
Right. So I would get, if it helps you at all, Sean, and be a little less offended, I think quarterbacks in general got pushed back on this.
Yeah. That makes sense. All right. I'm less offended. Sean, the word is wretched, not ratchet. And while we're at it, it's regenerative, not regenerative. Okay. I did mispronounce that on the Men's Tea Clinic commercial. No, I was saying ratchet. I'm not saying wretched.
Yeah.
I'm saying ratchet.
Don't correct Sean on his slang.
Yeah, it's slang,
all right?
Dude.
That's proper slang.
Yeah. Do you know what slang is, Texter? Okay. Do you know what
that
is? Yeah. All right.
Mr. Well, actually, right. No. Listen, if you're going to well, actually, somebody,
get it right.
Do us the favor of being correct.
Yes.
My God.
No, I said ratchet. And he didn't even spend ratchet right. He's W-R-A-T-C-H-E-D. He's probably thinking I mispronounced it. No, I meant ratchet when I said it. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Rob Stone joins us top of the hour. We'll get you guys ready for the big game between Texas and Ohio State this coming weekend on Fox. He's the host of Big Noon Saturday. Joe Mixon questions yesterday. These answers were not acceptable to the assembled media. Nick Caserio had an explanation I thought was a good one as to why the Texans approach injuries and reporting them the way that they do. We'll get to that coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast. Rob Stone will join us in about 15 minutes. We'll talk UT and Ohio State. First Fox broadcast with Dave Portnoy on the broadcast. I'm curious, too. I think ESPN is also going to be at that game. I'm always curious what it's like when both Fox and ESPN are doing game day, their game version of game day from the same place.
And now, did this end up being fake news, or at least the initial story wasn't the complete and total story that Portnoy is not going to be allowed in the building?
Not allowed on the field, I don't think.
Not allowed on the field.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. We'll ask Rob. Rob, what's going on with this Portnoy thing right now?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
This Portnoy's a big Michigan guy.
Huge Michigan guy, yeah.
And he's talked a lot of smack about Ohio State.
Well, and he's reportedly being brought in. Dave Portnoy, the founder of Barstool, for those who don't know, very outspoken, and a business genius. I mean, he's turned Barstool into a huge thing. Obviously, the thought is, or the people are saying that Fox has basically hired Portnoy to be kind of their answer to McAfee. You know, McAfee, that outspoken, big personality kind of thing. But Portnoy is very much a Michigan and Big Ten fanboy, and the reports are that Fox people around Fox feel like that can counterbalance the SEC slant that ESPN has.
Right, yeah. Now, it's interesting because McAfee, like McAfee knows when to come to heel.
Yeah.
You know, like he likes to paint himself as a renegade and everything, but they can heel boy him pretty when they need to.
Yes.
Portnoy is not wired that way.
Yeah, we'll see.
When Portnoy hears no, or he hears yes, or when somebody says no, he hears yes, or I'm going for it. It was the Atlanta Super Bowl when he got booted out of the media night, wasn't
I think
it?
You're right. Yeah, because the Patriots were – that was a Patriots-Rams Super Bowl. It was at Atlanta Super Bowl in January 2019, yeah.
There was – the best is, if you go back in time, Portnoy's outside the facility there doing a selfie video, I think talking about how he just got booted out or something, because he snuck in with a mustache on. In the background, you can see Paul Gallant trying to get one of those rentable scooters to work.
Oh, yeah, they had a ton of those in Atlanta.
Yeah. Well, I was using them. It was a blast. Yeah. But it's hilarious if you know Gallant, because Gallant's he's a Boston guy, you know, and Barstool's Boston-based and everything. And I don't know, I can't remember if Paul even knew that Portnoy was anywhere in the area, but he made it into the very background of this video him, like, messing around and, like, you know, getting angry like Paul tends to do.
Yeah.
Or Seth, whatever. It was an awesome little video because of that.
That's funny. So he was like 20 feet away from a guy who's probably a hero of his, and he's just sitting there trying to get this scooter out of the rack.
It was even further in the distance.
That's hilarious.
It was one of those things that you kind of can't listen to the main person because you're looking in the
Paul?
Back of the video.
That's great. That is great. All right. We'll talk to Rob Stone at the top of the hour. Here's Nick Caserio yesterday on Joe Mixon. Was the setback that we've gotten with Joe Mixon, was all this expected?
Yeah, I mean, with all injured players, kind of take it one day at a time, and so whatever their timeline is, you know, we kind of handle accordingly. I'd say the players that are on PUP or NFI, I mean, they're out 4 games or 4 weeks, so once we get through 4 weeks, we'll kind of evaluate it at that time.
Okay, all right. So do you anticipate Joe Mixon playing this season?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll take it one day at a time, and we'll evaluate those players after 4 weeks and kind of see where they are in their progression and then make a determination.
Okay, what about you, D'Amico? What's the deal with Joe Mixon right now?
My expectation is for Joe, we're taking it one day at a time, and when he's ready to be back, he'll be back.
Okay, so it feels like this Mixon, the secrecy with which they're handling Joe Mixon right now felt like kind of a tipping point yesterday. Landry Locker asked Nick Caserio towards the end of this press conference, how do you and D'Amico Ryans approach disseminating injury information?
Yeah, protect the players. So, again, I mean, it's not public information. So we're trying to do, again, because here's what's happened with injuries, Landry. All right. Everybody tries to make an extrapolation about when are they ready? What are they doing? well, you guys said it was this number of weeks, then it was early, then it was later. Like, there's no good solution. The solution is protect the players and look out for the best interest of the players. Take it one day at a time. Everybody's on a different timetable. Everybody's got a different process that they have to go through. And that's how we handle it. So, again, like, other teams may handle it differently. So we just do what we feel is in the best interest of the team and what's best for the players. And D'Amico has said this. He was a former player, so he obviously has a pretty good lens. I just think sometimes, you know, there's an extrapolation that tries to get made about every little detail and about what a player is going through. Look, players are dealing with a lot, and I would say in a lot of cases, it's very mentally fatiguing and taxing for that particular player. And who else, you know, nobody else really knows what else they have going on top of their injury. So we're trying to be sensitive. Look, I understand you all have a job to do and you're trying to get information. Like, we understand that. We respect that. But we're also trying to look out for the best interest of the players, because that's what we feel our responsibility is to them.
All right. Former player Seth Payne, you're taking what Nick Caserio just said.
Oh, I've got an informed look. Look, Sean, I played the game.
And 10 years.
Here's what all of you don't understand.
That's right.
I think that there's two parts to this. And when it comes to the fan base, I think the fan base has widely diverging opinions about all of this. I think there's some that think, hey, yeah, exactly what Nick is saying is true, 100%. They don't have to say nothing. I think there are a lot of people that maybe, you know, aren't even Texans fans, or if they are Texans fans, maybe they wanted to draft Joe Mixon into their fantasy draft.
Yeah.
So there's a broad spectrum of how fans feel like they should handle it. I think I agree that it's good that the Texans stand by their players and they're not going to divulge any information. I think that there's more to it than just that. I think there's also a gamesmanship side of it, where you just have a policy of keeping things close to the vest as possible whenever you can. And it's not, you don't have to justify it in every single instance. Why are you guys playing it close to the vest? Why this? You just always do. And that way, over time, yeah, maybe you can gain a competitive advantage by it somehow. And it might be minuscule, might be none at all, but it's just you keep everything close to the vest. You stay tight-lipped. The Texans are a very tight-lipped organization. There are not a lot of intentional leaks or unintentional leaks. So I think both those things can be true. It can serve the team well, but it can also serve the player well. I think there are times where I think players might want their information to be out there, but the team is saying, remember when Arian Foster put out that image of his hamstring or whatever?
Anti-awesomeness is what he called it.
Yeah, and I don't think the team at that point necessarily wanted people to know exactly whether, like, it's especially within the season, they want to release as only the information that they have to release.
Correct.
And nothing more. So it keeps the other team guessing. It keeps the other side guessing. It's not a HIPAA situation, so you can stop it with your HIPAA text. And if you do text in something about HIPAA, please use the correct acronym at least.
Yes.
It's not HIPAA with an A, okay?
It's the two A's. It's the two A's.
Right. Yeah. It's HIPAA. It's not HIPAA with an A at the
two
end.
Two P's.
So it's not a HIPAA thing. It's more, it's how teams choose to do it. You know, teams having different policies. I mean, look at the Astros with Kyle Tucker. Were people happy when the Astros gave more information about exactly how it went? No, they were not.
No.
They were livid that the fact that they hadn't diagnosed the actual issue at first, and then the Astros got piled on even more than they already were getting piled on once they did divulge more information. So it's not like there's a proper way for the team to handle it from a PR standpoint or anything. The fact of the matter is, it's like anything else in life. When something is going on that you're not happy about, you get mad at everything else surrounding it. So I'm not happy that Joe Mixon isn't going to be available for the next 4 weeks at least. And then I start getting agitated and getting mad at anybody and everybody that's standing around the situation.
Yeah, yeah. And we're in a time of year where there's no reporting on any, the team doesn't divulge anything about any injuries this time of year. We won't get an injury report on players until next week. Mixon won't be on there because he's on the PUP list, but guys who are banged up who are on the 53-man roster are going to be listed on an injury report next week. I thought that was one of Nick Caserio's best answers that he's had in a press conference setting, because I thought that was a reasonable answer as to why they handle things the way that they do. The disconnect that I have is more with D'Amico Ryans comparing injuries of football players to medical issues of regular people out there, which we don't have time to play the audio here because we're up against it, and it's literally a 2.5-minute clip. Maybe we'll play it in the 9 o'clock hour. But I totally get D'Amico trying to protect the players. I totally get the emotional side of it that he has with maybe the effect that reports on players. And I completely side with him on the need for accountability of people reporting incorrectly on season-ending injuries and things like that. I 100% get that. It's when D'Amico does a thing like, hey, you guys wouldn't want your medical information out there for the world to see, that kind of thing. I'm kind of like, look, you live in a world where the medical information on players is part of the fabric of the sport. There's a, you know, there's a reason there's an injury report every week. It's gamblers.
I wanted to read John McClain's condemnation of Nick Caserio.
Oh, yeah.
But he retweets so many people. I've been scrolling this entire segment and haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah.
So John McClain,
he was not happy with Nick.
A couple days ago, accused Caserio of being word salad and all that.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
So, maybe by the end of the show, maybe I'll finally scroll down to where that
good luck
was.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Our first college football watch party, brought to you by Flight by Yingling, is coming up this Saturday at Boomer Jack's, 1110 Grand West Boulevard in Katy. Party starts at 11 a.m. Doors open at 10:30, though. Doors open at 10:30. Watch the games. Have some ice-cold Flight by Yingling, $4 drafts, and root for your favorite team. We'll have some great prizes from Yingling to give away as well. See you there, out there. I'll be out there at Katy on Saturday. Looking forward to that. 10:30, doors open. Rob Stone, he'll be in Columbus for that particular game, Texas and Ohio State. He is the host of Fox's Big Noon Saturday. We will talk to Rob Stone coming up next about that game and the upcoming college football season. Stay there.